The Tea Stop In podcast series is inspired by the memory of the last surviving founder of the Australian Cinematographer Society, my friend, the late John Leake ACS. When he and his wife Marion retired from the film industry, they bought a little motel outside Sydney, and it became a tradition for cinematographers and other filmmakers to stop in and have relaxed conversations about the industry and the craft of cinematography. It earned the nickname of the Tea Stop In. This series sets out to recapture the spirit of those conversations. But this time, we're inviting you to listen in.
The Tea Stop In.
I'm Ben Allen, and welcome to Season 2 of The Tea Stop In. First of all, I'd like to say thank you for all the amazing feedback and support on Season 1, especially the two special episodes on the new Mac Pro and the dark episode of Game of Thrones. In fact, after the Game of Thrones episode, Ronja Hansen, ACS OEM, the National President of the Australian Cinematographer Society, suggested to me that I should follow up by speaking with his friend Fabian Wagner, who was the cinematographer on that episode. So on the phone from his home in London, I'm speaking with Fabian Wagner, ASC BSc. Fabian, welcome to the Tea Stop In.
Thank you.
In recent years, you've specialised in some very high-end TV drama. How did you end up in that area?
Well, it's kind of lucky, to have ended up where I ended up. I started in low-budget, in very low-budget stuff, and then started doing TV in the UK. I'm German originally, but I've been living in the UK for the past sort of 20 years almost. And so I got my first break as a DP on a TV show in the UK. Before that, I was doing mainly sort of music videos, low budget commercials, and kind of, my own things basically. And so throughout the years, the various TV shows, kind of all the UK primetime shows, then, some other shows that were more successful overseas, like in the States, like for example, Sherlock. Mm. And then suddenly kind of fell into the whole, Game of Thrones world, which sort of opened up a whole new, side of my career, I guess.
So we'll come back to Game of Thrones, obviously, but Sherlock's a particular favourite of mine. What was that like to work on?
I mean, Sherlock was great. That was one of the best experiences I had. In fact, actually, it was probably the worst and the best experience at the same time. I had never worked with the director, Paul McGuigan, before. They were looking for a DP for the second season, and Paul was coming back to the two episodes of the three. And I think the producers had actually found me, or the producers had known about me, so they kind of suggested me to Paul. We met, we had a chat, we kind of got on the right, and, he offered me the job, and the episode, I shot all three episodes, and it was two different directors, but Paul was directing two. He came to the first one and the last one. And the first one, we actually shot them in reverse. So the first one that we shot was The Hound of the Baskervilles.
Wow.
So we started with that, and Paul and I didn't get on at all. Now I can say this now because we've become very good friends, and we've collaborated since then many times, and, we're still very good friends. And I think he was basically testing me. He wanted to see how much he could push me to do something interesting. But that was quite tough. That was maybe about 7 years ago. I was in my early 30s. I had done a lot of TV beforehand, but I had never, worked with a director who kind of pushed me so much to do something interesting. Mm. I always had that ambition, obviously, to shoot something in an interesting way. But when you do TV for a long time and you're shooting very fast, sometimes you very easily fall into a level of comfort where you just repeat something that you've done before because it worked last time, so you do it this time. It's sometimes a time issue, sometimes it's a comfort thing. And Paul kind of immediately saw that and pushed me out of that and pushed me further to do something different. The way he did that sometimes wasn't, it's not like he was unfriendly, but he was, he pushed me. So, when you don't know someone, that can be taken the wrong way. Mm. So we kind of had an interesting start to our relationship. And the first few weeks really weren't that enjoyable, I think, for either of us, because we were just sort of trying to get to know each other and seeing where we could where this would go. So that was a difficult start, but then we kind of found our groove together. And by the time Paul came back to shoot the last episode that we were doing together, which was the actual first episode, which was Standing in Belgravia, we just got on like a house on fire, and we had the best fun. And creatively, I had the best experience with any director, you know, working with them. And it's amazing, and I owe Paul a lot. And I now look back at this time, at the difficult first couple of weeks, thinking he told me more in those few weeks than I had ever learned before or after, I think, because he was just pushing me to do better than I thought I could do, or I thought I could do within the time that we had. Wow. And he knew that I could do better. And he didn't want to settle on something that was okay. He wanted me to make it better than that. And I now really appreciate that. And like I said, I've learned more than any other time. And after that, we've become very good friends. And I mean, shooting Scandal and Belgravia, which was also the sort of festival episode, I mean, I thought they were all fun, but that was sort of the one that, you know, got us all the Emmy nominations and then everything. You know, you can clearly see in that episode how much fun we had together, how much we were each pushing each other to do something more interesting. And yeah, it was just, that turned out to be just such an amazing experience.
Because of the time pressures with TV drama, there's of course that temptation to go, okay, well, we're just going to do what works, and we're going to do what worked last time.
Mm.
How difficult is it, both as a cinematographer and then also in collaboration with the director, to break out of that?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think it's really important and to try and break out of it. And it's not that difficult. It's just because, you know, for example, on that production, you know, I hadn't worked with the producers before. I hadn't worked with the director before, you know, and so there is sometimes a lot of pressure on you to, you know, obviously to finish things in time. I mean, you always want to finish in time. You always want to make things as good as you can. But sometimes you can, you know, you can fall back on this old little trick that, you know, okay, well, this lighting setup will take me 5 minutes. It means the director's got more time for working with the actors and we will be finished in time.
And there's situations where that's a legitimate choice.
Yes, absolutely. And it's also, you know, it's in a way, you know, part of your responsibility as a cinematographer. Everybody always talks about, you know, it has to look right and it has to be this and this and this.
Yep.
But, you know, your responsibility is also for the crew, and it's also to the production that you do have to finish in time, or you have to try and finish in time.
Mm.
You know, and there's a lot of things that sort of fall into your responsibilities. And I remember clearly there's this one day, which was a really tough day. We started during the day, but it was going into a night shoot, and we had something like 8 or 9 pages to shoot.
Wow.
Within those 10 hours, it was pretty full on. And one of the first shots was a day scene that we shot. Then we moved into the house, and it was a shot of Mark, Sherlock's brother, sitting on the table drinking some whiskey. And I said, let's shoot it at the end of the day, just before we go into nighttime, so we can, you know, we can get some interesting light outside. And I lit it, and I was, you know, I just remember clearly being on set and thinking, okay, you know, we've got hardly any time left. It's nearly getting dark. We need to do this really quickly because we have to start the night scene as soon as we can to be able to finish the whole thing. It was a massive day. And so I lit this shot with him, and I lit it very, very simply. And I said to myself, oh, you know, if I had 5 or 10 more minutes, I know that I can make this so much better. But you know what? Let's sacrifice this one shot because it means it gives us more time after.
Wow.
And I just remember it as clearly as it was, as if it was yesterday. And I said, okay, I'm ready to go. And we did the first take. And then Paul said, sorry, that's not right. Everybody out of the room, I need to speak to Fabs. Everybody calls me Fabs here. So Fabian, I need to call Fabian. And then I was like, okay. And he goes, right, this is not right. I know you can light this better. Okay, and I need you to light this better.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. And I said to him, I know I can do this better. I was just a bit worried about the time, and I want you to have, you know, enough time for the night. He said, I don't care. Let's make this better. And I knew that it would only take 5 minutes. I knew what I had to do to make it better, but I just, you know, because of my thinking, I kind of just went into that kind of
needed permission to go there.
Exactly. And so I'll never forget that because, you know, it is only 5 minutes sometimes that you need to make it so much better. You know, it's not like I need a lot of time to make it better. It's just an extra bit of time. So I took 5 minutes and I did it the way I should have done it originally. And he loved it and it was a much better shot. And we shot it and we still got the night. It was a crazy night. but we still managed it. And I think that was one of the biggest lessons I've ever had, really. And I really owe that all to Paul because, you know, I know what I've done since then is every time I'm on a set with a director and I feel like if I feel like I can do something much better within a very short amount of time, and those 5 minutes sometimes seems to the director like an hour because they want to shoot and shoot and have more time with the actors. But if I say, look, you know, please just give me 5 minutes more, it'll be worth it.
Yeah.
And I'll make that point and I really push for that now. And it's great because, you know, it's good for the product, but it's also good for myself, you know, because you don't get lazy and, you know, I don't like that.
Of course, the audience is never conscious of those extra 5 minutes, and those extra 5 minutes never matter in award season.
No, they never know. No, they never know.
But on the day, those extra 5 minutes can be completely overwhelming.
Absolutely. And they can be crucial to because it accumulates, doesn't it? It accumulates throughout a 10-hour, 12-hour day, those 5 minutes. If that happens on every scene or 10 minutes, it turns into suddenly that's an hour, you know.
That saying, overtime's no big deal at the start of the day.
Yeah.
That relationship between the cinematographer and the director in the traditional primetime TV drama model, there's this director of photography who stays with the show and the directors come and go. And then there's the other model where, as with Game of Thrones, where the director and the director of photography are a team that come and go.
Generally in the UK, you know, the way that they work over here is in blocks on TV dramas. So you would, if there's a 10-episode TV drama, they would break it up into 5 blocks of 2 episodes each. And then you'd have a director and a DP to come in to shoot block 1, which is episode 1 and 2, block 2, episode 3 and 4, block 3, episode 5 and 6 and so forth. You know, sometimes, you know, as a DP, you would sort of maybe start off with block 1 and then you would stay on and do block 3 and maybe block 5. So you would get another director or maybe the first director would come back for the last block. It's always very, it depends on how it goes. I love both. I love working with the directors that I know and that I've worked with before. You know, people like Paul, who, you know, I've built up a friendship with and a relationship with. Someone like Miguel Sapochnik, who I've worked with. You know, we've become a team on Game of Thrones by accident, really. But it's great. But also, I love working with new people. I love working, meeting new directors and exploring and discovering new ways of working and working together. And I think all of those things just, you just learn so much from all of that. So, and it's an enjoyable experience.
So, Game of Thrones, you're probably the most talked about cinematographer in the world right now.
I'm not sure whether it's a good thing or a bad thing.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I've got to be careful what I say. After last time when I said something which got slightly taken out of context.
Do you want to explain that? What you said and how it got taken out of context?
Sure. I mean, first of all, being the most talked about cinematographer, I'm not sure whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. I think a bit of polarization is great. You know, I consider film and TV and cinematography as an art form, and art has always polarized and should always polarize, and you can never please everybody. There's always going to be people who love it, and there's going to be people who hate it. And then there's going to be people who never see it or watch it. So I think that's great. I don't think that's a bad thing. The unfortunate thing that happened with, you know, the comments I made last time was that the main reason that I talked about why this episode was dark, not underlit, by the way, just dark, was a creative decision that we had made that we didn't want to see what our heroes were up against. But that got slightly sort of forgotten in the mix of, you know, social media and people going mad about it, was that some people just, I guess, don't accept that as a creative decision and they just want to see everything. You know, some people are, unfortunately, I think, I'm afraid to say, a bit lazy, but they want to see everything that's going on. And we made a creative choice to not see what's going on because we wanted the audience to be in a, almost with our heroes in that battlefield, looking into a darkness that is unpredictable and uncomprehendable, I guess.
And because it is a creative decision, you could argue either way whether it's successful or not.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not a judge of that. I obviously defend my decision. It's something I've worked very, very hard for. It's something I spent a whole year doing. I thought about it a lot. I prepped it a lot. I wanted to make the best possible, most interesting TV episode that it can be for what it was. I felt that that was the right look. I felt it had the right feel. I felt that it was, you know, I stand to my decision and to our decision, and I think it was the right way to do it. Of course, you know, not everybody's going to like it. And, you know, apart from that, a show like Game of Thrones that's been so successful over the years, I think it's unnatural that when it comes to an end, plus something that's been so hyped for ages, that there's going to be...
There's going to be a reaction.
The higher you are, the further you can fall. I mean, it's just what it is.
One of the things that I see, there's a major kind of disconnect in the popular consciousness and the mainstream media in terms of the understanding of where brightness or darkness in that kind of high-end TV drama comes from. I've looked at some of the behind-the-scenes footage. It didn't look like there was any lack of lights there.
Oh, no, of course not. No, some people were saying, why didn't you switch on the lights? And, I mean, there was so much light. There was more light than, I mean, I think we have to, that was the biggest lighting setup I've ever. I mean, that was the biggest lighting setup I've ever had.
Yeah.
And I've done some big lighting setups.
Yeah.
And it's one of the biggest lighting setups I've ever seen in any, I mean, it's just, you know, but it's what people want to see. It's, you know, I've had one guy on my Instagram, I think, put up a picture of The Long Night, and underneath he put up a picture of Lord of the Rings, The Battle of Helm's Deep. And obviously they look very different. And I mean, I was a little bit baffled because, you know, bless Andrew Leslie, he's an amazing photographer, and I loved those films and they were great. And by all means, if I had wanted it to look like that, I could have made it look like that, but we didn't want it to look like that. So it was the most pointless comparison there is to put those two images next to each other. And that kind of says it all. That says it all about how some people see it, you know.
So what was your process in terms of determining the darkness of that look? What was the process in terms of exposure and colour grade?
I mean, you know, there's a lot of things playing for that episode. I mean, so first of all, you know, as soon as I read the episode, as soon as I had the script, you know, when I spoke to Miguel, I was like, okay, this has got to be intense. This has got to be dark. We wanted to make something that was really immersive, trying to make it really immersive. We've done so many battle scenes now, and battle scenes are great to look at for a few minutes, and they're fun to shoot, but after a few minutes, you get bored. If it's just a battle, it just gets boring, which is why we took the approach when we, for example, did Battle of the Bastards. You know, we took a slightly different approach because we just didn't want to, even ourselves, we didn't want to just see a battle for 40 minutes. That wasn't the right thing. But we knew that we wanted it to be dark. They really wanted it to be at nighttime. And so the whole thing, how that came about, was so many different layers. I mean, first of all, that sequence is made up of 5 or 6 different locations.
Wow.
So shooting one way would be shooting at Winterfell at the actual location. Shooting the reverses of that would be sometimes at Winterfell, but sometimes on a green screen stage, sometimes on a black stage, sometimes in a completely different quarry, depending on what we could see, what we wanted to see. You know, there were so many different elements to the whole thing. Creatively, for us, you know, David and Dan wanted to have this massive army of the dead, which was hundreds of thousands of dead. And creatively, everything that everyone said the first time when we just read the script was, when we look towards the army of the dead, we don't want to see 500,000 dead people. Because creatively, we didn't want to see that, because we wanted to feel like, okay, there could be 10, or there could be 10,000, or there could be 100,000. But also, you know, we didn't want to show like a massive CGI shot of them. You know, so it was also, it was creatively driven, but it was also us saying, well, we don't want to see a massive CG shot. But probably the CG people would have probably said, like, look, guys, we can't afford to do like 40 shots of 100,000 dead, you know, because that's also a massive thing to shoot. So it was born out of so many different elements.
Because I guess part of it is that's what everyone was expecting. And so by not giving the audience what they were automatically expecting, it was a way of making the audience sit up and pay attention.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think it did exactly what we intended it to do, which I think is great. I'm very happy with it, but it obviously set some people off the wrong way.
So just on a technical note, what's your process in terms of setting exposure?
Well, I was working towards trying to shoot everything on a 4. T4. Reason being, I shot the whole episode on zoom lenses. It was all on the Arginos that we carry. We also carry the cooks, but I didn't want to use the cooks for this episode. I just, creative reasons, which I don't want to talk about too much because cooks can be angry with me. I've been using the cooks for a long, long time. I used the cook lenses all my life, all my career. You know, the cooks are great, and they're sort of the go-to lenses in the UK, especially for TV. So when I started shooting as a DP here in TV like 15 years ago, every job I did was with the cook lenses, and they're great, lovely lenses. But I think over the years, because I use them so much, I just got slightly tired of it, which I think is only fair. You know, I want to try things out. I want to try new things out. I want to, you know, try a new look. I want to try new lenses, new actions. So I just felt like for this particular episode or for this season, I just didn't like the look of the cook. So I decided I don't want to use any of the primes. I want to stay with the Dungeness. And so I shot everything on the Zooms, obviously nighttime on the Zooms. As soon as we were 2-8. And then because we, you know, there was so much going on from an action point of view, and I tried, you know, because I also wanted to give our focus pillars a bit of a chance, because a lot of it was long lenses, you know, especially my camera that I operated. I had a great focus pillar on it. A friend of mine, but, you know, the way I operate and the way I operate when I'm writing as well is that I see things very quickly and I jump in and I shoot them without giving him a rehearsal time or anything. So, you know, shooting a T4 at least made it slightly more manageable.
They've got half a chance.
Yeah, exactly.
So T4, you're obviously not buying into the whole trend that's been happening over recent years of shallow, shallow, shallow depth of field.
No, I don't. I'm not a big fan of that. I mean, I think there's certain times when that's very nice to have a very shallow depth of field. But, you know, to me, I always think that I've been watching some stuff and I think, you know, you're in a beautiful location. You're in some incredible space, and you can't see anything of it because everything is just mushy in the background. And I've never ever liked that. I want to be able to see where I am. On Thrones, for example, you know, we've got so many amazing locations, so many great sets. You know, the set design really is incredible. What they built for episode 3 and episode 5, for example, in our case, you know, I want to see a bit of that. I just find it slightly distracting when it's just a completely out of focus background.
Obviously, having made that choice to work at a deeper stop gives you the option of working with zoom lens most of the time. Are there other advantages to that?
Sure. I mean, obviously, my first driving point in that case was the look of it, especially the bokeh of those zoom lenses with the flames and the fire. I much preferred to the look of the primes. But then, you know, because we're doing big battle sequences, I was shooting 4 cameras at the same time for most of it. You know, when you're in a zoom lens, you're just able to just, you know, we weren't using them as a zoom, obviously. We were using them as primes. But it's just so easy for the operators to readjust in case they have to. Because, I would say in general, we would have 2 cameras handheld. One camera would be on a crane, and then one camera would be on a 10-1 super long lens. And so, you know, if I go a little bit crazy on my handheld camera and I'm following a character more than I did in the rehearsal, then the operator on the long lens, for example, in our case, it's David Morgan, who's a fantastic, he's our B camera on the Dragon unit. He's a fantastic operator who's been with the show for, you know, since the beginning. So he would just immediately react to that and he would just punch in another 20 mil so that I would be not in his shot, but he would still get something interesting, which he just can't do now. And you know, Game of Thrones is a big show. Game of Thrones got a lot of money, and obviously we have more time than on another TV show. But in the end, whatever you do, you never have enough time and you never have enough money, I guess. But that's just whatever you do.
Because the ambition of it all scales.
Yeah, for the ambition,
with the budget,
you know,
doesn't
so
it?
Big. And even though, absolutely, everything grows at the same time. Every single Game of Thrones episode I've done, it's not like we had a lot of time in between to mess around. We are shooting every single minute of the day that is shootable. We're either shooting or rehearsing, but mainly shooting. So, you know, everything that you can get is helpful. So if you're shooting a 4 camera setup and, you know, I've planned each camera, I know what each camera should get. If you suddenly end up with 2 cameras not getting anything because they can't adjust to what's happening on set, then, you know, you're losing valuable material and time. So
what sort of pace were you shooting at on those episodes?
I mean, it's hard to put that into sort of a, you know, into time thing. And obviously because we were shooting at night, so I was lighting for 4 cameras at night time, which is not an easy task.
Just epic.
I reckon we were shooting fast. Not necessarily shooting, but there was constantly stuff going on. We do rehearsal. We know what we're doing. Miguel and I pretty much knew what we... I mean, we were very well prepped. We're a very good team, so we know exactly what we want to do. We would set up the three cameras that we had already planned. I would like for that. The snow guys would snow it up. They would move the special effects guys would move their special effects machines into shot, because everything we do on films, we try and do as much as possible in camera and for real. So we'd have real snow, real wind, real fog. So we would, I'd speak to our guys and make sure that they placed them in the right spots, and then we would shoot, and then I would find a place for my camera to shoot for once we started going. So I mean, Game of Thrones is probably the only job I've ever done where I've never actually been able to just sit down and relax, because you're constantly working.
So in that context of moving so fast, there'd be a lot of people would be tempted to say, okay, you should be sitting back looking at monitors for all of the cameras. How important is it for you in that context to be actually operating one of the cameras?
This is a tricky question. Well, obviously, first of all, I do watch everything that's being done. So normally what I would do, this is a process that I've been doing all my life. I've always operated. I've always loved operating, and I consider operating to be really, I think it's just really important to me. I mean, first of all, I love operating. I love composition and framing. I love being close to the actors. I love being close to the action.
It is the absolute front row seat, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a front row seat. What I love most about it is working with actors. I generally have a good relationship with actors, and I just think it's amazing to be there to be able to see to the end. I also, and I think that's probably something because I've been doing it all my life, I feel much more comfortable looking through an eyepiece than I do looking at a monitor. And it's almost like I tend to see more problems when I look through the eyepiece. I tend to be able to solve any issues much quicker. I don't know where that comes from, really. Don't get me wrong, I love sitting at my monitor sometimes in my chair and have a nice cup of coffee. But, the way I work is I generally set up the cameras I would set up the A camera and the A and the B and the C camera, for example, in a film sense. Do rehearsal with them. I would see what they're doing. I would see all the issues. I would correct the lighting issues or whatever they are. And then once I know that they're doing what they're supposed to do, then I sort of give it away and I leave it in the capable hands of all the amazing operators I've worked with. And then I'll just focus on what I'm doing. And then I would watch the take back and make sure everything's okay.
Obviously, by the time you're shooting, the lighting for that moment is set. Do you find that there's something about being close to the action, looking through the eyepiece, that informs the lighting for what comes next, or not?
I mean, yes and no, I guess. I mean, I always know, I always kind of know what comes next, because that's something I would have done in prep.
Yep.
I just find it more tangible, I guess. It's hard to explain because it's such an emotional thing, but I think I find it more tangible looking at through the eyepiece than I do when I'm sort of, I feel further away sitting at a monitor.
Yep.
And also, for me, I just don't like not doing anything. I love running around. I love jumping in and finding angles. I just don't like sitting in a tent all the time.
And I think there's something about the process of operating. It's a very satisfying process.
Absolutely, yeah.
So,
best thing. I think operating is the best thing about filmmaking. Operating is the best. Operators, when I first, I knew that I wanted to become a DP from when I was very young. I knew that I wanted to become a cinematographer, and I think the first time I was on a set was probably when I was about 14, and I saw the operator and I thought, wow, this looks like a great job. And it's just a great job. You've got, you're there all the time. You're on a camera operating.
In many ways, it is the best job on set, isn't it?
I think it is. So don't take that away from me.
When you're working to a T4, what's your process of working to that stop?
I've been doing this for quite a while now, so I kind of generally know how much light I would need to get to that stop. So, I had more light than I needed on that three episode. So I would start, I think we probably had about three soft boxes. That was, like, in the case of Winterfell, for example, where we have the location, which is on a field in Northern Ireland. It's a place that we shot before. I've done nighttime there before, never on that scale. But, I knew that I'd cover a huge area. So I was after, this time I was going after, I used to light nighttime with HMIs, but I've gone away from that in the last couple of years. So I've been using bigger tungsten units. So I had 3 soft boxes of, I think each soft box must have carried about 20 sky panels, or maybe 40 sky panels in each soft box. Wow. Which were covering the whole area lengthways. It's a massive, massive area. But they were all sort of dimmed down to maybe 25%. I surrounded the whole set with 4 Wendy's, basically.
Wow. What was your reasoning for moving away from HMIs for night?
I don't know. To be honest, it's one of those things where, I just kind of thought, if I keep doing it this way, then I'm never going to learn how it could work another way. And I think because when I did my first TV show as a DP, I was doing a second block of an episode of a TV show, and the lighting package was HMIs because the DP before me had used HMIs. And I thought, I'll just use the same thing. And so I just used HMIs because it was just one of those things that just had come along. And it was fine. It all worked perfectly fine. But then, at some time, I just thought, I want to try something else. So I guess that's where it came from. It wasn't any... I didn't suddenly think, "Oh, this looks crap," or "I want to." I just thought, why not? Why not try something else?
Yeah.
So yeah, what I was just saying was that if I had everything up on 100% on that lighting setup, we must have had about 10 full Wendy's, 20 quarter Wendy's, 3 massive soft boxes. If I had everything up to 100%,
you would have been at like T8 or something.
I would have shot on a T11.
11. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, it was just, I knew that, I wanted to give myself enough there to then be able to take it down and just make it right for my T4.
Wow.
And then one of the great things is the Game of Thrones, which is something that this show does and no other show I've done. Maybe there have been shows like Sherlock, for example. As a cinematographer, it allows you to shoot it the way you want to do it. And, everybody always wants to go dark and make it moody. And on this show, I remember doing my first season and I shot something very dark. And because that was my first experience with the show, I thought, oh my God, they're going to just take this and they're going to push it up in post and it's going to be... And when I came to seeing it, I thought, wow, this is darker than what I had done. And it's great because they really appreciate your creative integrity and they really stick to it and they really support you and go, this is the way it should be, let's go with it. And that's a great thing.
And there's something very significant about that, I guess, that continuity of creative intent from the producers, the director, the cinematographer. We're going down this path. Let's go there properly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a team decision,
So in terms of the Long Night, how early did the discussions about how dark that should be begin?
Fairly early on in prep, as soon as we all got into Belfast, Miguel and I started talking and we were both saying, we think it would be cool if we didn't see the army. We think it would be cool if we, if they came out of nowhere. And then we started talking to visual effects and they were saying, oh, it'd be great if you didn't see the army instead because yes. It would save us, £500,000
yeah.
on visual effects. So, I think very early on. That was all decided very early on.
And what's that that collaboration been like between you and Miguel?
Oh, it's great. Miguel and I have become very close friends. It was very lucky, it's one of those things that happened. I did season 4 of Game of Thrones, got asked to come back for season 5. And originally that was for... Hardhome and The Gift, those 2 episodes. And originally they were going to be directed by Neil Marshall, who was a director who's done Game of Thrones before, who I also know. I've known him for a long time, actually, from being in the UK. And but he dropped out sort of very last minute for another reason. And so Miguel came on board, and it was just a very lucky coincidence that, they got Miguel in, and we met, and we just got on very well from the very beginning, and obviously with those 2 episodes together, and we had a lot of fun doing that, working together, and stayed sort of friends afterwards. And then when season 6 came around and Battle of the Bastards, it was basically we were saying, well, we'll do it together. If they want us to do it to come back, then we'll only do it if we do it together. And so it's a great relationship. We're very, very close, and he's incredibly creative and amazing with the actors, and great ideas, and it's just good fun working with him.
How important is that relationship between the director of photography and the director in terms of being able to do good work as a cinematographer?
I think it's very important to do good work as a cinematographer. I've worked with so many different directors now, and it's interesting because some directors kind of leave you to do the technical aspect or the camera stuff. They don't really get involved in how it looks. They just want to focus purely on the actors, which is an interesting approach because they sort of leave everything to you. I've also worked with directors who are very controlling, who sort of want to control every single frame and every single thing that you do as a DP. And then you've got the ones in between who just love collaborating. And for me, main reason why I love my job is because you're meeting different people and you're collaborating with so many different people. And so that for me is I enjoy that relationship the most. And Miguel, for example, and Paul, they're the kind of people who I think it's probably most fun with, and it's the most fruitful outcome working with those kind of directors because you're kind of really working together towards something.
So on a show like Game of Thrones, do you get any input into the colour grade?
Absolutely. I mean, they were very good about the colour grade. They let me do what I wanted to do. We talked about it prior. And same with Thrones. I mean, I didn't make it to LA this year for the color grade of Ismate because unfortunately my mum wasn't very well and she passed away during it. But, I know Joe Finley is our colorist. He's an amazing colorist. He's been doing the show since the beginning. And, so we would send each other stills and we would talk about it on the phone or, we would text or email about stuff. And, I knew that he would do justice to what I've done and he would do the right thing for the show.
So even though
there was no worries there too.
So even though you weren't in the room, there was still a really solid collaboration going on.
Oh no, absolutely. Yeah. I always make sure that we talk and even if I can't be there personally, I would send stills or he would send me frame grabs that I can grade at home and then I would send them back or he would send me ideas and we would talk about them. There's always a collaboration going on for sure. I think it's such an important part of our job, working with a colorist. I think it's such an integral part of it, especially when you have to shoot fast and you can't fix everything on set. I just think it's so important. I'm just grading the two episodes of The Crown, which I did a while ago, for season 3 of The Crown. And it's just been such a lovely thing to do. It's in London, so right now I can go there and I can actually sit there with the colorist. And, it's been great to sort of, again, it's another collaboration like you have with the director or the gaffer or the operator or any crew member those collaborations just, in the end, they just add to the piece, hopefully, and make it better.
It's another one of those great parts of the job.
Absolutely.
So, The Crown, how was that as an experience?
I mean, it was just nice to shoot something that was, I love doing all these big things like Thrones and Justice League, green screens and visual effects and all that. It was great fun to do, but to go back to, it's almost like going back to my sort of where I've come from, the actors and locations, no special effects, no visual effects, it's just shooting.
It's like they say, it's one of the biggest challenges is actually just shooting two people having a conversation in a room.
Absolutely, yeah. Oh, that's great.
Maybe a great
again,
room.
I was operating and it's a great room, great actors. And, again, I was operating and it was just so nice to be there and, you sort of look through the eyepiece at Olivia Colman, doing an amazing performance. And, so it was a very, very, it was a lovely experience. And, my friend, Sam Donovan, who was directing my two episodes, he's been my best friend for a long, long time. We met back at the film school in the UK about 18 years ago. I used to shoot all his short films and we kind of sort of grew up together. And then we hadn't worked together professionally for at least 10 years or so. So it was great to work with him again. And it was a lovely experience. It was great.
That just reminded me of a conversation I had many years ago with Phil Mayhew, director that he worked with very early on in his career. And he did a very, very low budget feature. I think he said he shot it in like 9 days or something.
Yeah.
And when we had this conversation, I'd just come off a very, very fast shooting low-budget feature. And he said that many years later, the same director called him up and said, oh, do you want to come and shoot a James Bond film? That was GoldenEye.
Yeah, see, that's how it goes, yeah.
And, you know, it's those relationships that sometimes having known someone for a long time is an inherently valuable thing.
Mm. Oh, absolutely, yeah. You know, it's funny, with, for example, Miguel, and it's also the same with Paul and Sam, actually. We're so tuned into each other when it comes to composition, framing, and the look of things that we hardly ever talk about how things should be. Mm. And it just makes such a difference to not have that discussion about what's the right thing, but you both intuitively are drawn towards the right thing.
You're not talking about it because it's so important.
And you're not talking about it. Yeah, and it's just such a great thing to have, you know, when you know, I had on the trial with Sam many times where I set up a shot and he would come over and look at it and go, oh my, this is great. That's like what I was thinking. And it's just so nice to have that shortcut, you know.
And it's efficient as well. I mean, it's a very fast way of working.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
Now, I believe you've actually filmed here in Australia as well.
No, that was a great experience because I did the strip called Mrs. Biggs, which was shot in the UK, but we then went to Australia for about 8 weeks to shoot the Australian parts there and also some stuff that was meant to be in South America, but we were shooting in Melbourne. That was a really lovely experience. That was actually my first time going to Australia to shoot something and to actually just go to Australia. It was just great, and Melbourne was lovely, and the crew there was, yeah, I'll never forget that job. That was one of my favorite jobs to do, with a director called Paul Whittington, who's a lot of TV, but I've done a lot with him as well. And he's one of those directors. He's like Paul and Sam. And you know, he's very collaborative. And it's one of the shows that I look back at, one of the TV shows that I feel most, you know, fulfilled about creatively, I think. You know, it was a six-parter. And we were shooting the whole lot. Paul was directing the whole, all episodes, and I was shooting all episodes. So it was almost like shooting a film that was split into six episodes. And I think it just had a real look to it and a lovely style to it. And
so what were the elements of that look that you were so satisfied with?
I think it was just it had a coherent look that was constantly evolving throughout the episodes. It just felt like one piece, even though it was six episodes. And I always think that's quite tricky to do in episodal TV. You know, it's easy to make it look the same for people who just watch it. But I think for us who watch it much more closely from a lighting and composition point of view, it's very hard to do that.
Yeah.
Over the course of 6 hours. And I think it's probably the only time that I ever thought that I kind of achieved that.
That actually gets back to something that you said about Game of Thrones, that you're shooting in several different locations for The Long Night. How did you both conceptually and technically maintain consistency?
I don't know. I always felt that pretty easy. I've never struggled with putting those things together. I think the reason why Game of Thrones is pretty straightforward is just because we're using so much elements of special effects with smoke and snow and stuff. I was watching it the other day for the audio commentary, and we were talking about where each was shot, and there's a scene that consists of something like 10 shots, and literally shot one is on location, shot two, the reverse, is on a green screen, shot three is on a different stage, shot four is shot against black, shot five is back on location, shot six is back in a black studio space, and you just can't tell what's what.
Wow.
And so, but that's always been a challenge that I love doing, is trying to match things up. I've always liked that.
Fabian, thanks for stopping in.
No, thank you very much. Enjoy it very much.